Today's Tuesday, February 19th, 2019, and this is episode 85 of the Birdland BS Podcast. On today's show, Joe Flacco's headed to the Mile High State. The Orioles add a few veterans. We're going to give our takes on two potential number one picks for the Birds. The Terps play sloppy at Michigan, and we're going to catch you up on some Caps talk. Stay tuned.
So let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred Scott and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Sports, they got it. Want excitement, the topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
What's up, BSers?
What's up, guys?
Fred and Scott, episode 85, the Birdland BS podcast. We got a full show.
Yeah, man.
All kinds of topics to talk about. As you can see up here on the monitor, we got some breaking Manny news that I'm excited to get into here in a little bit. Scott, yeah. I'm kind of like weirded out by the way you're like, I want to hear your thoughts on this. I want to know what your opinions are. But you wouldn't talk about it prior to the show.
Nope. We're saving it for you guys.
All right. We'll see how this flies.
Crazy eyes.
Before we dive too deep in anything, I want to remind you guys, are you in the market to buy or sell a home? Do you want someone who's going to go to bat for you? Call our guy, John Scheffenacher, over at Cummings & Co. Realtors. John's been in the business for 4 years now and is dedicated to getting you the best deal possible. He's always available to take your call anytime, day or night. For you Oriole fans out there, you know him as the backwards hat guy with the sunglasses on, the button-down shirt, the orange bright button-down shirt, and the black tie. Go give our guy John a call today, 443-604-6298.
As Fred said, today, not tomorrow, today, right now, right now. No, not right now, after the show, okay? but no, make sure you reach out to John. John helped my wife and I buy our home a few years back. It's been great ever since, always taking care of us, always looking out for us, giving us different tips and tricks to help make our home a better place, not just for us, but for future resale as well. Does stuff for his clients all the time. There's all kind of client events. Talked about last week, he had his Lego movie that he got to get everybody into the theater and have his logo up there and everything. It was actually pretty cool. Like I said, I wasn't able to attend, but just the pictures look awesome. I can only imagine there. Yeah. But make sure you reach out to him ASAP. Give him a call at 443-604-6298. You can also hit him up through his email. He'll respond to you at any time through email. It's johnscheffa@gmail.com. That's johnscheffa@gmail.com. And when you contact him, whether it's by phone or by email, make sure that you tell him Birdland BS was the one that sent you.
That's right. So
breaking news.
Breaking news.
Dude, my boss like emails me this like, I don't know, 30 minutes after I saw it come across, and I'm like, dude, you're late. That's old news.
Yeah. So if you didn't have your phone on you on your drive home, which would be strange, or if you didn't have your radio on while you were driving home, which would also be strange, Manny Machado has an agreement in place with the San Diego Padres on a 10-year, $300 million deal.
Yeah.
This was kind of the deal that everybody had talked about for years about Manny and Bryce and all those things, but just kind of the way the offseason had played out and the way things had gone so far and some of the numbers that were thrown out, you know, the first offer that was out there by Chicago, very low offers, nowhere near this kind of mark.
No.
And a lot of people, even, you know, even us included, talking about maybe gone are the days of these 10-year contracts just because of how bad some of these 10-year contracts have been, not just in major league history, but in sports history,
yeah,
professional sports history. But this, I mean, this deal, it's the biggest free agent contract in American sports history.
Now, there's a lot of people that are confused by this, and what's being explained is the combination of 10 years, $300 million.
Right.
That's what's being compared at this point. So don't get your panties in a bunch saying, oh, well, it's also free agent, by the way, because everybody was complaining, oh, no, Stanton had a bigger contract. It was 10 years, $325 million or something like that.
Right.
Stanton was also on an extension. That was an extension contract. It wasn't a free agent contract. So it definitely was interesting. I have to ask you, before I give you my opinion, I want to hear yours. Your take on the fact that Machado was able to get a five-year option on this. So after the fifth year, it is his option to continue the contract.
So we started by this, right? How blessed is this guy? Right? So life started off like, all right, son, we're going to bless you with the God-given ability to have the ability to play professional sports, right? Then we're not only going to bless you with that ability, we're going to make you a generational talent, a once-in-a-generation type player.
Okay.
Then when it comes to your first contract, we're going to put you in the warm, beautiful city of San Diego. Not for just 2 years, not for 3 years. We're going to keep you there for 10, and we're going to pay you $300 million to do it. Doesn't get much better than that for this guy. And then you throw in that five-year option. I was actually talking to James a little while ago before the show went live about this very scenario. For him, for Manny, this is as win-win as you get.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it. He's 26 years old. He's got a 10-year contract. So even if he played out his contract, he'll play up until the age of 36. But with this five-year option, you know, one of the things that James and I were talking about was how important is a championship or a World Series to Manny. There's a couple of things with that. One, don't underestimate this San Diego team.
No.
This San Diego team has 10 prospects in the top 100 right now. And they've got a pretty solid lineup.
They got six in the top 50, by the way, and right. Three in the top 25.
Exactly. So just thinking that the Padres are what the Padres have always been is a bad way of thinking. So there is potential with this team. But forget that for a second. The five-year clause. He's going to have 5 years, half his term, to make $150 million, and then at the age of 31 say, you know what? I've got 150 mil. This was cool. Now I want to go make more, and I want to go play for a contender. I want to go after a ring. This, I mean, kudos to San Diego and getting this deal done, going after the guy that they wanted and making it happen. And I almost feel like San Diego historically, at least in recent history, has been kind of bipolar with the way that they've gone after free agents. And what I mean is we've seen this before where they've made some big splash free agent signings, right. But then like halfway through a season, they're like, we're going to go ahead and throw in the towel and trade them off now. I don't think that that's what's going to happen here with Manny. They're making at least a 5-year commitment to this guy. And they're also making a pretty hefty financial investment. So you'd have to have a team on board with that kind of trade. And that, you know, that there's a lot of circumstances that would have to happen for that to work. But what's really interesting to me about this entire thing, and I want to get your take on the entire situation as well. They're not out of the stakes yet.
No,
there's still talks with Bryce Harper going on in the background.
Let's not forget the Padres finished, I think, from fourth or fifth from last in payroll last year at, I think, $104 million. Okay, great. You go and you sign, who was it? Oh, God, I can't even remember his name right now. Hosmer.
Eric Hosmer.
You got Hosmer in there. So you already have him, you know, on a pretty decent, pretty solid contract.
Right.
You know, you're coming and getting Manny. I think there was somebody else that was like an $80 million contract. I think was it Hedges? That was the catcher.
Yeah.
That was signed it. He was signed at like $80 million, right? So now you've got those three guys that you're already in it. And they're still, even if you consider their payroll last year and Manny added, they're still only at $134 million.
Is it that? I thought it was like 110.
That was 110 before Manny.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was before Manny because of Hosmer and everything. Right. Now, there may be some, they could probably work out some of these contracts to be at that. That probably wouldn't be a problem.
But still, $134 million, you got plenty of room to go out there and get a Bryce Harper if you really wanted.
Sorry, thinking about it, it wasn't Hedges, it was Will Myers.
Will Myers, the outfielder. From Tampa Bay.
Yeah, so he got signed to the big deal. So they're going out and spending. The one thing that I think people are kind of forgetting about, and some people are saying, oh, we'll see him in 2022 or 2023. Look, I'm not putting it past them. With the best farm system out there, they're going out and getting the pieces that they need, and they're willing to spend to get those pieces. Look, I wouldn't be surprised to see them in contention this year, next year.
Yeah, I mean, look, you've got the Dodgers in the same division, so you're always going to have that competition there because those guys they print money in L.A., so when it comes to finances and being able to go after guys that they want to, they can do that. Yes, they got to watch the luxury tax and all of that, just like everybody else does. But and that's I think a big part of the reason why they didn't pursue Machado was more so for luxury tax purposes. They weren't going to be able to do it.
Let me get back for a second.
Yeah,
because Manny Machado and his agent, I tip my cap, gentlemen.
Yeah,
to pull off. Not just the 10-year, $300 million contract, but to slide in and somehow convince the Brewers to give you...
The Padres, sorry.
I'm thinking about my other news later. To give you a option after 5 years.
Unreal.
It's just, it's genius on his agent's part. Because when you look at that, he is guaranteed at this point $150 million to your point.
Right.
Guaranteed. And then he can decide. One thing that people don't recognize, the 5-year option stuff, it's an option every year.
Yeah.
Meaning if he wants to come back for year 6, they're getting close. He wants to make a little bit more money.
What?
He can do it. He had a bad year. Guess what he can do? He can take that 6 year.
And I think part of the reason that they had to throw that in was because the rumors going around was that Chicago, the White Sox, had not only upped their offer, but they had thrown more money on the table on an average annual year.
The AAV, yeah.
Right. They were only offering him an 8-year deal versus the 10-year deal that San Diego was offering. And if it was all about finances for Manny,
you would think he'd take the 8-year deal.
Right. But I bet you he told his agent, like, hey, if you can work out this opt-out clause for me after 5 years, shit on it. I'll take the lower annual salary.
So that way I can make long term guarantee.
Exactly. Absolutely. 5 years from now, if Manny is progressing the way he's progressing, he's still only going to be 31.
Right.
So he will still get another 5-year massive deal if he needed to.
And worst case scenario, he's getting a 3-year deal at that point. Worst case scenario.
Yeah, right.
But for me, I'm honestly really surprised, but I hear rumblings and I have yet to hear or see it confirmed. One of the interesting parts to this contract, besides San Diego,
right?
There's a rumbling of and again, I haven't heard confirmation of this yet, so I'm not saying this is a guaranteed thing, but if it is, I'm damn surprised that he'll be playing third base.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, at the end of the day, money talks. And again, if you're offering him $300 million to be a water boy, he'll go out there for $300 million and be a water boy.
I'd go out there for $300 million. I'll go out there for $100 million and be a water boy. Come on, let's go. Right,
but like everybody had said, including yourself, like Manny's so harped on being a shortstop and that shortstop was where he wanted to play, which when he was here in Baltimore, obviously that was his big thing. That was before the contract. That was before anything. Hardy kind of blocking his, position right there at shortstop. So he had to go to third base. Just so happens that he turned out to be one of the greatest third basemen ever playing that position, winning the platinum glove. But like I said, when it comes down to dollars and cents, Manny's about his money. And that's no more obvious than it was today with this announcement.
No. And I think the reason that if he does play third base, there's a guy that they have, Urias. It's not bad. Luis Urias. Look, he's only batting .208, and some people are going to point that out. But when you look at the kid had 48 at-bats in 12 games, wound up hitting 2 homers, 5 RBIs, 3 walks, and a stolen base. He had 10 strikeouts, but the other thing kind of offset the strikeouts a little bit. That's a kid that you can kind of see up and coming. And I think a lot of teams, I do wonder if some of the teams were saying, if you're coming on, you're playing third base.
Right.
You know, we don't know those conversations. I'm not sure that we ever will. But I wonder a little bit if that was the case, if that was something that wound up happening.
It very well could be. I don't want to spend too much time talking about this Manny deal, but we definitely wanted to bring it up, obviously, with the ties to the Orioles and, you know, just the immense amount of money that went into this deal. But how do you think Bryce Harper is feeling right now? Sitting back like...
I saw the meme. Oh, I saw the meme like 20 minutes afterwards. Somebody took a picture of Bryce Harper flipping his hair.
Right.
And it said afterwards, waiting for Bryce Harper to sign a contract for 10 years, $300 million and a penny.
I mean, that's basically what it is. It's a pissing match at this point. Oh, well, they paid Manny $300 million. Better pony up there, guys. $320, $350 is coming my way.
Right. You better give me a little bit more at this point.
All right, Scott.
Hold on. Before you even move on here for a second, we have to share the Yankee fan.
Oh, man. If you haven't heard this yet... This was great. So there was definitely one Yankees fan that was out there that was pretty happy about this Manny Machado deal. Listen to this.
Manny Machado just signed a $300 million deal with the Padres.
I don't want Machado on the Yankees. That's
good news. Why not?
I'm telling you, like, as soon as I heard that clip, all I could think of was The Sandlot. Such a classic clip. That if that video doesn't get retweeted on Twitter a million times, man, I don't know what would.
I gotta chime in here for a quick second. our buddy Big Play Davey Mack over at the Big Play, he's a Big Play CEO over there. Yeah. He chimed in and says Lindor is going to get 350 plus in 2022 and crush my soul.
He's playing his cards right now. I mean, he's playing pretty aggressive with the media and with his agents. So Lindor is going to get paid. That's for sure.
And Bryce does also bring up, he doesn't understand why the Orioles never made an attempt to lock him up before. So
yeah,
it's so questions.
Yeah, it's definitely true. All right, man. So another guy that, there's some people in Baltimore that are happy for this move. There's some people that aren't so happy for this move. I'm kind of in the middle with the whole thing. Joe Flacco is heading to Denver in a trade for a fourth round pick. We haven't had a chance to talk about this. Obviously, this has been something that's been going on now for a few days. What was your first reaction when you heard the news that he was going to Denver?
About time, Eric.
Yeah.
I was expecting this to be one of the first moves that Eric made. I do think, I mean, fourth round guy, if that is in fact what it is, obviously everything, they can't talk about it until, what, March 3rd or whatever, but it's on NFL. It's on the Ravens. Like, it's like, oh, we can't talk about it.
It's got to be the official league year, and that doesn't come till March 3rd or whatever.
But so. Either way,
yeah,
I think if it is a fourth round guy, I think they were desperate enough. I think you maybe could have pushed. I mean, between them and I know the other ones that was floated out was the Redskins,
right?
Which guy I work with is a huge Redskins fan. He thinks that was floated out there just to lock up somebody taking him so that nobody would take one of the QBs in the draft.
Conspiracy, I don't know, but like maybe everything that I was hearing about it. Now this is after the fact. This is recently, so this is after the trade was announced or the agreement in place was announced. Right. Was that the only reason that it was announced so early? and that the agreement was put into place so early was because the Redskins were getting aggressive. And the problem is the Redskins don't have a fourth round draft pick because they traded that last year for Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. So they didn't have a fourth round draft pick. So they were either going to have to give more than a fourth round draft pick, which would have been epic. If Eric DaCosta would have pulled that off, anything right. more than a fourth. Honestly, in my opinion, kudos. Kudos to Eric DaCosta to be able to pull anything, really, in my opinion, above a seventh round pick was a steal.
Really, a seventh?
Yeah, I think so. I really think that if there weren't multiple teams that were going to go into a bidding war for this, the Ravens wouldn't have gotten anything. The Ravens would have end up having to cut him. And he would have
gone out of it.
Exactly. They would have absorbed the same cap number. From a cap standpoint, it really wouldn't have affected the team, trade or not trade. But to be able to get a fourth round pick in return is huge. And especially with the way the Ravens typically draft in the middle rounds. I mean, they usually do pretty good. That's usually where they're their strongest. So for me, this was a huge win. Did you see the picture going around on Twitter yesterday about with Flacco literally standing in like the regular, you know, coach line for the airport out in Denver? Hilarious. If that's not Joe Flacco, I don't know what is. But yeah, I mean, like I said, for me, this was a huge win for the Ravens. Appreciate everything he did in his 11 years here. I think that Flacco takes a little bit more flack. No pun intended.
Pun definitely intended.
Or it was intended, yeah.
It's completely intended.
He takes more flack than that it's really deserved. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that we can get into it. But ultimately, since that amazing run in 2012, it's 2019. Let's not forget. That was 7 years ago now. It's been mediocre Joe, average Joe at best. Since. So this was a move that needed to happen. The organization is obviously going in another direction with Lamar Jackson. We actually got to hear a little bit of Greg Roman's comments today through his first press conference as offensive coordinator and his plans to kind of revamp the offense and rebuild the offense.
Right.
This was a move that had to happen. Appreciate everything you did, Flacco. Good luck in Denver. That's just kind of my feelings on the scenario.
I hope he's not smoking anything while he's out there because he's already too mellow as it is.
Oh, my God. He would be asleep.
He would be.
He would just be sleeping, Joe.
Maybe it has a reverse effect on him. Maybe you do. Maybe give him a little
either that or he'd be paranoid, Joe. Right. What's going on?
Well, when you play with Leno Line like he was, I mean, it happens as it is. No, I think overall, I think, you know, to your point, I think it was a slam dunk for DaCosta to get something done, period.
Right.
I think once he does make the move, I honestly was surprised. You know, I get your point. I just think you could have pushed a little bit more, I would have been happier even with, if you're getting 2 7th round picks or a 7th round and maybe a 9th round or something like that, or, you know, a pick next year, maybe I'm a little bit more okay with it. Not that I'm not okay with this.
Right.
But I just thought you could have gotten at least a third round pick out of somebody for him. There's somebody that was desperate enough. You're in need of.
I don't know, man. I just
look the quarterback class. Let's look at this. Look at the quarterback class right now.
Yeah.
The quarterback class is not the strongest in the world. If you don't have a top 10 pick right now, your chances of getting a solid quarterback in this draft are little to none.
I get that, but how appealing really is Joe Flacco? Let's not forget how he's played over the last 5, 6, 7
years. I mean, if you're
years.
Denver and he beats you in Denver, I'm just saying.
7 years ago. 7 years ago. That's my point. It's like we tend to kind of live in the past because we're fans. And I mean, I don't blame anybody for that is a Flacco supporter. And I'm a Flacco supporter too. I've never had hate for Joe Flacco like some people do. Some people have just despised Flacco since day one.
Pure hatred.
That's not me at all. I love what Joe Flacco did and I appreciate everything that he did, but it was well past time to make a move. And again, I just... Even looking at Washington's situation, right? They didn't have a fourth round pick. So like I said, they would have had to have gone up higher. They would have had gone third or higher for him.
Right.
And it didn't make sense from a financial standpoint. If they would have taken on that contract between Flacco, Alex Smith, and Colt McCoy, they would have been spending over $50 million on the quarterback position next year.
And only have one to show for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And how good of a quarterback is Joe? You know what I'm saying? Like,
fair enough. And I see what you're saying there.
There are about three quarterbacks in this draft that are going to get drafted in the first round that I think legitimately, depending upon what system they go into and what team they're drafted to, could be starters in the NFL day one. So there really aren't a whole lot of suitors out there for a mid-30s quarterback who hasn't been relevant for 7 years.
Okay.
That's just my take on the Flacco situation. But again, wish him nothing but the best. Hi, Scott.
All right, man.
What are we drinking on today, my friend?
This week, it is Full Tilt Brewing Company. Their Baltimore Pale Ale. 5.9% ABV here.
It's good stuff, man.
It's very good. It's a very light beer. You know, most pale ales are going to be. This one, it's brewed using the hops and the barley. The aroma is kind of, I don't want to say it's hoppy, but it is a naturally hoppy beer. Like, you don't taste many very citrus notes. You can taste, if you are a beer drinker and you can taste or smell the wheat and the barley, there is a very strong, like, barley smell to this. But it's good.
It's very good.
It's refreshing.
What was the alcohol content on it?
5.9.
I'll take it.
So not bad, especially for a pale ale brewed here in Baltimore. Jerry actually shared with me while I was there picking this up that the guys that own Full Tilt actually are from Bel Air.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of different companies out there from the Bel Air, Hartford County. You know, we've seen Dundalk. We've seen Baltimore County. He's hit us up with some of the few local spots. So make sure you go see our guy Jerry over at the Liquor Stop on Conowingo Road in North Bel Air. He'll hook you up. You get yourself some of this Full Tilt Baltimore Pale Ale. You get 10% off of it. And remember, every week you go there, go see him. He'll hook you up and get you set up. Make sure you let him know that Birdland BS sent you so you can get that 10%, by the way.
All right, Scott, it's time for some Camden chatter.
Man.
Time for some Orioles talk.
Did you notice what I'm wearing here?
I know, man.
My spring training shirt.
You know, honestly, like, going into this season, I didn't know how excited or how amped up I could get for spring training and for baseball. You know, I think we're spoiled as football fans because typically the Ravens.
You mean it's competitive typically?
Yeah, right. It's very, very competitive typically, and we're usually hanging on to our seats down to the last play of the last game of the regular season. Like, they keep you interested. This Orioles team won 47 games last year.
Can go up.
It can only go up. That is absolutely true. No truer words have ever been spoken out of your mouth, Scott. It can only go up from here.
Hold on. I'm not going to let you just skim over that statement. What do you mean? What do you mean, no truer words?
At 47 wins, it can't get any worse than that.
I sure as hell hope not.
Exactly. And I'm going to throw my guy Brady Kempa here a little bone. We're talking about it today at the office. Optimistic Brady thinks that there's going to be a pitcher that you're well aware of and called a Cy Young contender last year. Is going to win 18 games this year.
Yeah, he did say that last week.
And win over 70 games this year as a team. Look, as much as I bleed orange, as much as I love my birds, you got to come down to earth a little bit, Brady. Just a little bit. 47 wins last year. Look, if they get to 60 this year, I think personally that's a win. We're going in the right direction. There's some things that, for me, will make this year successful. And it really doesn't come down to wins and losses. It comes down to players getting opportunities, players being evaluated and tweaked. So what's working, keep it working.
Right.
What's not working, let's work on it. Let's make adjustments. Let's see. Chris Davis, for example, if he comes out and he's hitting 150 in the first month and they decide that they're going to keep him in the lineup for whatever god-awful reason, if they do that, let's see him change his batting stance up. Let's see him
hit right-handed.
Let's see him do anything different than what he's doing. And we never saw that with the old regime. Never saw it.
Dude, have him hit right-handed and have him bunt. Seriously.
He
might get more hits.
He's got to. I mean, they leave the entire left side of the infield wide open for him. Lay a bunt down. Make him honest.
And if he's batting right-handed, it still would be because they're expecting his bat to be so slow right-handed that he could lay down a bunt. I'm just saying.
So, again, for me, it's going to be things like that, developmental type stuff, kids getting chances that normally wouldn't have gotten chances because they were blocked by other players and big contracts.
So then what's your feeling? Because the Orioles made some moves this week. With that being your mindset, my curiosity comes. They signed the veteran shortstop, Alcides Escobar. Mm-hmm. 32 years old. They sent him to a minor league deal. With a spring invite. Mm-hmm. With a $700,000 potential
contract.
Yep. What? I mean, you're talking about that, and then you're bringing in these guys. I mean, it's...
Okay, so I get where you're going with this. And when I first heard this signing and another signing we're going to get to here in a second, when I first heard about these two signings, I had that same instant reaction, like, wow, this kind of goes against everything that I thought the Orioles were going to be doing. And this, you know, kind of defeats the purpose of what Mike Elias said by giving young guys chances and this, that, and the other thing. But there is something to be said about having a veteran leadership presence in the locker room. And I don't even mean that from a personality standpoint or an experience standpoint, but so there's a couple of things that this particular move with Escobar does, right? One, this basically solidifies the question mark around Jonathan Villar, whether he's going to be playing shortstop or second base. This puts him at second base, which I think is his better position.
He was at second base the whole time. I don't know. Like, I don't understand where the thought process of him playing shortstop came from, because I thought he's a better second baseman.
Exactly.
Overall.
He is. And nine times out of 10.
I'm just saying, I don't know where that notion, because I've heard the same notion. You and I both talked about this. I just don't understand where that notion even came from.
It was lack of options. It was more so we have more options that are more major league ready for second than we do at short. So, yeah, he's played there before. All right, let's move him there. We don't have to worry about that anymore. Escobar can do that. And he brings all-star experience. He's been a gold glove winner. He made a World Series appearance back in 2015. These are all things, obviously the defensive part of it, the gold glove, when you have good defenders up the middle, it makes you better as a team, as a whole. And I mean, that was kind of one of the whole reasons that even J.J. Hardy, when he kind of struggled the last two, maybe even 3 years of his career here in Baltimore, that was why he was out there every day. It wasn't for the bat. It was for the veteran presence and for having that gold glove, sure glove at shortstop, the fundamentals to it.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that this kid brings. Obviously, for me, it's a low risk signing. He plays real good defense, which is going to help a young pitching staff. If you're, you know, if you've got a young pitching staff out
somebody
there,
somebody you can rely on behind you,
one less thing for a young pitcher to have to stress about is knowing that, hey, when I put this ball in the strike zone, if they put it in play, my guys behind me got my back.
Okay.
And to me, I think that's more so what this signing was about.
I can see where you're going with that. I was intrigued by it. Same kind of thing. I do think a perception on the going young thing. We got to remember that statement, those statements were made by Dan Duquette. They were not
that's
made
true.
By Mike Elias.
That is true.
So Mike Elias says, I'm going to field the best team that we can. And if that means bringing a guy up to fill, I'm not saying this is what he's saying, but if he's saying, look, I need to fill it hole at shortstop for right now until I have a guy that's ready, then great. That's fine. I think it's a great signing. I think it's a great move.
Right.
I just think you have to keep all of your options open. I do like that they signed him to a minor league deal, so there's no full major league commitment there. I do like the invite to spring training. He has kind of fallen off over the past few years, which is why he's only getting this. But if he comes out and proves himself, I think it's something that is kind of worth the investment, so to speak. He has high potential.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, the other guy that you and I talked about, we were surprised, but it was kind of like, okay, cool, was Eric Young.
Yeah.
Pulling in Eric Young, who is a career 245 switch hitter.
Yep.
Which brings a great piece to the table. with a 312 OBP and a 332 OPS.
Yep.
So pretty solid all the way around. Mm-hmm. He's a contact hitter. He's played three outfield spots, so you can bring him anywhere. At any point. And he's played infield as well.
Yeah.
So let's not forget about that.
He can be that like super utility guy if you need him to.
Right. And he's, because of his experience, to your point with Escobar, he does bring some leadership and mentality. And it gets, I'm not saying that Trumbo and Chris's leadership doesn't mean anything, but Trum's hurt.
Yeah.
You know, is question marks on him.
One of the things that I really liked about Eric Young, and I'm not in the locker room. I'm not, you know, I just look from the outside like everybody else does and just kind of see what I see. Trumbo is more so a lead by an example kind of guy from what I see. He's not a pull you aside kind of guy and say, hey, maybe go about this way. Maybe change up this. Maybe do this. He just basically, he goes out there. He's a workman. He puts his hard hat on. He goes out there and he works his ass off and he leads by example.
He, you know what he is? He's a home run cakes guy.
Yeah.
Meaning he's like Markakis in that sense. Markakis right. was never the vocal guy. He was always
but everything
quiet
that you
leader.
Heard about Markakis, though, was that he was different in the locker room. He was that vocal leader in the locker room. We
true.
Just didn't
just
see it
on
the
field.
You didn't
right.
see that on the field. What Eric Young, and again, I don't know a whole lot about Eric Young. This is all secondhand information. Everything that I've heard about Eric Young is that this is a coach in the making. This is a guy who, whenever he decides to hang it up, day one, he will get a coaching offer somewhere.
Right, somewhere.
He's just got that, you know, that ability to lead. But forget all that for a second here. What we're going to see with this team is we're going to see a complete dynamic shift from what we're used to in Orioles past. I mean, we've been used to nothing but 215-plus home run seasons. Like, that's what this Orioles – that's what Camden Yards was built for, and that's right. what this roster has been built for decades now. Home yeah. run first hitting team.
The three-run homer.
What we're going to see is we're going to see a shift. I think we're going to see some more small ball, some more National League-style baseball. We're getting speed into our 25-man roster, which we haven't had, and I couldn't tell you how long.
Yeah, no.
I mean, when you start thinking Cedric Mullins, Jonathan Villar. Jonathan Villar had 60 steals in a year. 60.
Yeah.
Eric Young, who's probably going to be the fourth outfielder. So he's going to be a rotational guy, a guy that, like I said, he could play all three outfield positions.
Play a little bit of third base if you need him to.
Right. He'll be that super utility fourth outfielder kind of role. But what he'll also be is he'll be that late inning guy that comes in and can steal you a base, a pinch runner kind of guy. Even at 33, he still has some gas left in the tank. It wasn't too long ago. I think it was either 2013 or 2014. He led the National League in steals.
No, I 100% agree. The one thing I think you can't kind of rule out here, I mean, he is also on the minor league deal, but this is another guy. Not only could he be your fourth outfielder, he also, remember, we've got a third outfield position that we aren't 100% on who's
going to
be.
No, that's absolutely true.
So
absolutely.
he could be the lock, and that turns somebody else like a DJ Stewart into the fourth outfielder, which right. that's not bad because I think DJ Stewart, you know, has the build, if I'm being honest, he's got the build more of a third baseman or a first baseman.
I want to see what kind of shape DJ Stewart comes into camp in. I haven't seen any pictures of him yet. I don't know what kind of shape he's in, but that's what I'm interested in. He's got that, like, I said it last year, he's got that, like, Pete Incaviglia, like, body where I feel like as he gets older, he's just going to get chubbier and chubbier and chubbier.
Mean like Sidney Ponson?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, right. He's got that
beer gut.
Right. He's got that body that I'm like, I don't know, but if he comes into shape, he puts in the work, he needs to seize the opportunity that's in front of him right now.
He does.
I mean, he's in a very good position. He came up and he got the experience at the end of last season, so that's kind of out of the way. The jitters of being on the major league spotlight and that kind of thing are out of the way. He got that done. Now you've got a legit shot at trying to win a starting job at the major league level. You need to be, I hope he was putting in the work in the offseason, and I hope he puts in the work in spring training, because I'd like to see nothing more than that kid win the starting job.
I would love to see it as well. I'm not right there with you. Speaking of guys that are, you know, kind of putting in work, and there's two guys as we kind of look forward, and we foreshadow here to the June draft. There's two guys that you and I have kind of decided to break down as we got the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
Unless for some dumb A reason, Elias decides to trade back, which Elias, if you're watching, if anybody can get this to Elias, I'm going to tell you, don't do it.
You don't see that in baseball like you do in football. You don't see players, teams drafting
back.
But you
do, see it every once in a while. And I tell you what, right now, if we were competing, for lack of a better word, maybe you wouldn't see it. But with us being a little bit more out of it, so to speak, than most people can kind of foreshadow, I don't foresee it happening. I'm just saying, if it did, don't do it. Don't do it, Elias. Don't do it. Even if it means you get the first pick for the next 3 years, don't do it.
Well,
just don't.
A guy that I have my eyes on, and maybe this kid kind of pulls at my heartstrings a little
bit. Did you post this on Twitter?
I might have. He might pull at my heartstrings a little bit because he's a catcher. I was a catcher for many years.
He did pull at mine a little bit too.
That's right. We were both catchers. That's right. This kid, kid out of Oklahoma State University, catcher Adley Rutschman, 6'2". Tell me if this doesn't sound familiar. 6'2", 215-pound switch hitting catcher.
Are you sound saying oddly saying familiar? My wife might have a new favorite player.
All I'm gonna say. All right, so Matt Weider was like 6'5". Now this guy's a pretty darn good looking guy. He's got straight teeth. So
okay, that's all that matters.
I'm sure that'll come back to bite me in the ass later. But he comes from a pedigree of sports. His grandfather Ad was actually a two sport coach at Linfield College, where he won 3 national championships in football and 1 in baseball. It's crazy. He's like the only coach in history that's won a title in both sports as a coach at the collegiate level.
Impressive.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Father Randy was also a catcher and a coach himself. So, I mean, he's got the pedigree. He was brought up from a very young age. He was drafted actually in the 40th round of the amateur draft out of high school back in 2016. But he decided to go to Oklahoma State. And he actually started his freshman year as a two-sport athlete. Not only was he playing baseball, but he was actually the kicker for the football team.
Wow.
Pretty impressive. I mean, look, he's a kicker, but nonetheless, playing two sports, pretty cool in my opinion. The one thing that I thought was awesome was that In 2018, now remember, he was only a sophomore last year. Batted .408. He had a .505 on base percentage, .628 slugging percentage, which equates to a 1.13 OPS. He had 102 hits in 250 at-bats.
Damn, son.
102 hits in 250 at-bats. 22 doubles, 3 triples, 9 home runs, 83 RBIs in 250 at-bats. Mind you, to kind of put that in perspective, a typical everyday major leaguer bats somewhere around 500 to 600 at-bats in a season. Right. And 100 RBI season is a damn good season for somebody who had 500 to 600 at bats. This kid had 250 and had 83. Let's see. Smart math, double 250 to 500. That's 166 RBIs he would have had if you duplicate the numbers. Almost 50 doubles he would have had. He actually went on in 2018 to win the College World Series Most Outstanding Player.
So what you're saying is don't draft him, just sign him now.
That's what I'm saying. There's so much to like about this kid. Now, if I have to poke holes, because I'm like blowing this kid up to no end, if I have to poke holes anywhere, and honestly, I'm pulling hard for these, would be on the defensive side. And it's really, he's solid in my opinion. The only thing I didn't like about what I saw out of the videos that I watched on him was that he tends to stab at the ball a little bit, which is more so a fundamental thing. It's just something that kind of, with the right coaching and all that stuff, could be easily changed. But what I liked about him was that he was attempting to frame the ball. It wasn't the prettiest thing I've ever seen in my life, but the thought process is there. So now it's just a mechanics thing and working on how to turn the wrist and where to catch the ball to properly frame.
Catch it and bring it in.
Exactly, it, yeah, to properly exactly. frame. So that was really the only thing I could pick apart. This kid, his arm strength is uncanny. He can block with the best of them. Day one, they draft this kid. He's the best defensive catcher in the organization. Day one, without any work. So again, I'm picking at straws here. And what another thing that I was liking, just watching videos and watching some of the highlights, like you could tell that the team liked this kid and that they right. looked up to this kid. So he's got that like leadership mentality. And again, this was as a sophomore.
Right.
You know, not a senior. This was as a sophomore. And he got those kids' respect. A lot to like about Adley Rushman.
I don't blame you. It sounds like he got a good guy on our hands that we could potentially get. But there's another guy that's been at the top of both yours and my radar for a while now. And he's a high school senior. Currently, he's committed to Oklahoma. And it's Bobby Witt Jr. Kid, you know, senior in high school, 6'1", 185. Pretty solid build, especially for a shortstop this day and age. He can also, by the way, throw an 85 to 88 mile an hour fastball as a senior in high school. That's pretty good, considering that most guys coming out of high school are throwing anywhere between 85 and 90, and then you slowly work them up in college or single and double A ball to that 95, 96 range. So it's awesome to see, and it doesn't come as any surprise because he's got the strong family pedigree here. His father, Bobby Witt Sr., had a 16-year major league pitching career. So he comes from a pedigree that shows he can do this. So looking at some stats, it's a little harder to find the high school stats than it is the college stats. But over the past two seasons for his high school, the kid has batted .470 while hitting 18 home runs, 93 RBIs, and 92 runs scored.
Wow.
Mind you, in high school, you're only playing, what, 20 games?
Yeah, 20, 25,
something max, like that. Somewhere around right. in there. So it's impressive when you just look at it overall. This year, this past year, 2018, he played for the 18 and under national American team, U.S. team. In 9 games, he batted .576, a .615 OBP, and a 1.12 slugging percentage with 3 home runs, 18 RBIs, 19 hits, 18 runs driven in, and 1 stolen base.
How many games?
In 9 games.
18 RBIs in 9 games.
18 RBIs in 9 games.
Simple math, that's 2 RBIs a game. That's exactly. pretty damn impressive.
Exactly.
Wow.
The other thing, this kid's quick.
Yeah.
He can run a 6.660. That's impressive. Mind you, you've got NFL players that are running 4.240s.
Right.
So to pull in a 6, I mean, that's the equivalent of about a 4.440, which is damn good.
That's damn fast.
It is. And when you look at it, he's just overall throughout his high school career has been doing well. He was in 2017, he was one of only 2 underclassmen to compete in the Under Armour All-American game.
Wow.
One of 2.
Wow.
That's impressive. You know, that tells you the level of competition that he's putting out there against a level of competition that's 2 years older than he is.
There's no doubt that that kid is by far, leaps and bounds, the best high school prospect in this draft. There's no question.
No doubt. I mean, the kid's quick. He's got a solid right-handed bat. He's got the speed. He's got a smooth, reliable swing. He's a reliable defender. He's good on the mound, too. I mean, that's why I brought up the fastball. I mean, he's got a pretty solid fastball, and he's fairly accurate with it. I don't see that being his primary position right now in high school. That's his secondary position. Shortstop is his primary.
Right.
But I do think it's something to think about. And I mentioned the Under Armour All-American game. Well, guess what? He went back in 2018. And in 2018, again, as a junior this time,
This is his second year in a row that he went. He showed off some impressive tools, including that 6660, 104 mile per hour exit velocity.
Phew.
The power that this kid can actually
provide. At 17.
At 17, exactly.
Unreal.
He shows a lot of taste in his complete skill set. One thing that I thought was really, really interesting, and this talks about character. You talked about character with Rutschman. For me, this piece, he was the last player in the 2018 Under Armour. On Saturday after batting practice, he was the last player on the field picking up balls that were left on the field.
Yeah, see, it's little things like that speak volumes.
I'm not done. Because, by the way, that's after. So you had batting practice. That was over. Everybody left. He stayed and turned double plays for the third baseman that was there being filmed.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So he went through that, and then he's the last guy on the field picking up the balls. Oklahoma's got a good commit, but you know what? I want to steal him.
Yeah, I'm not going to be heartbroken one way or the other, whichever way the Orioles. Honestly, the only way I'm heartbroken is they don't pick one of these two kids, because honestly, I'm sold on both of them. The only thing, just looking at the situation and looking at, if you're a realist, where the Orioles are, right? The Orioles are at least 3 years, if not more, away from being competitive again, right? If you draft a kid out of college, which Rutschman, I think at this point would be 2021, you put them 3 years down the road, he's 24, 25. Not saying that 24, 25 isn't fine. It's okay. But when you could take a kid at shortstop and draft him at 18, you put him 3 years out, he's only 21 when this team is hopefully, quote unquote, ready to make a move. And now you've got this kid coming up fresh out of the minor leagues at 21 years old.
Fill that spot for Escobar.
Sounds very familiar, like a Manny Machado type situation.
Yeah.
Manny came up and this entire organization changed. The winning ways changed.
It did.
Part of that was Buck. Part of that was Dan. Part of that was the roster around him. But Manny Machado, you can't say that he wasn't a large piece to that puzzle. And we could ultimately see that same scenario with Bobby Witt Jr. And looking at Elias and his track record of what he did in Houston, Carlos Correa, a centerpiece of what that Houston organization is doing, also a shortstop.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think he's got a good eye for guys. I think he's gonna see. It's gonna be one of these two guys, huh?
Good eye for guys.
Good eye for guys. Yeah,
I like our guys.
But no, I think one thing that we're talking about these guys, and it brings a little bit of sadness to my heart that we're not gonna get to hear Joe Angel call these guys.
Yeah.
The man himself retires and hangs up the microphone.
Yeah, longtime Orioles broadcaster Joe Angel retired. We were actually talking about this today at work. It's kind of the last of the living legends in voices for the Orioles. I mean, when you go back and you think, right, for me, 36 years old, I can go back to the Rex Barney days and the Chuck voice Thompson. Of the States, Chuck Thompson, Fred Manfra, Joe Angel, John Miller, like all these like iconic voices in Orioles history are now gone. And Angel was, it's going to be strange. Not that I was a huge radio listener, but I mean, anytime I walked away from an Orioles game and got in my car to go somewhere, that's the first thing I tune into.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be the same not having Joe Angel on there. Man, a lot of respect to Joe Angel. Appreciate all the years that you put into and the picture that you painted.
It's beautiful through radio.
Yeah,
you know, it's that old school style, just truly painting a picture. I think I tweeted out earlier this week when the news came out, sad to hear him go and everything. And I said, if they need somebody, you know, I'd be happy to join Jim Hunter in the booth.
Shameless plug. I saw that.
You know what? I would, dude, that would be honestly, and I put hashtag dream job because that really would be.
Absolutely. That's why we do this. I mean, I can speak, I think I can speak for both of us. You know, we do this because we love it. We do this because we're passionate about it. We love our home teams. But man, how cool would that be to be that guy, you know, that guy that calls 162 games on the radio? Like, I just,
yeah,
no. You would, I mean, you're filling large shoes, Ben McDonald and whoever else is out there that's going to be filling the roles. I don't even know what the radio is going to sound like moving forward. I you know, I don't mind Ben McDonald.
Hunter has moved a lot more towards the yeah, the TV side of things. Right, so I don't know that. I think you see Ben, you know, I know that you, I mean, this past year you saw what? You saw Ben. Right. Dave Johnson has been in there a lot.
Yeah, I don't want Dave Johnson in there.
Dave's good for, look, Dave's good for some insight.
No disrespect to Dave.
He's good for some insight as far as the game goes. Yeah. He's not always the paint picture guy. And I think he would, if I'm being honest, I actually know Dave.
Right.
And I think he would paint that picture for himself. He's good with the numbers and the, you know, the ins and outs of the game itself. As far as painting the picture, you know, he's maybe not the, he's no Joe Angel. He's no Fred Manfred.
Nobody is.
Nobody is.
I mean, I don't care who they put in that position, who they put in that role. Nobody's going to be able to replace those. You just got to create a voice and a name for yourself and just respect who you're replacing.
Look at Ryan, the public address announcer for the Orioles.
Yeah, and you know what?
Kind of came out of nowhere.
Kudos to Ryan. Ryan's doing a great job down there at Camden Yards. He doesn't have the personal touch, you know, the you know, give that fan a contract.
But you know his voice.
But you know his voice, exactly. And he's done a great job down there. So kudos to Ryan Wagner for, you know, what he does down there at the stadium. But I'm intrigued to see. But nonetheless, respect Joe Angel. It's time for some Terps talk.
Man,
Ryan's been killing it.
Him and Bryce.
Him and Bryce in the Facebook chat room about the game. Well, unfortunately, we don't have the game on here, but we're living it.
We're living scene it by scene
through those two guys. Before we get into basketball, let's talk a little football because there was a lot of big news around the Terps team.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, it was. Loxley,
some interesting move. I shouldn't say move. Well, I guess it kind of is a move, but very interesting considering our current roster and current.
Some interesting moves. But do you follow Mike Loxley on Twitter?
I do.
Have you been paying attention to
I will be the first to admit I've been guilty of not following it as much as I should.
So he started this thing ever since he's been here, at least that's when I noticed it. He started this thing where he tweets out this GIF, and I don't know where the GIF is from. I don't know what cartoon it's from, but it reminds me of like the old He-Man cartoons. Like that's just the animation, the way it looks. It's just a simple animation. And all it is this round wall enclosing in on something sitting on the ground there. And that's all it is, just this GIF enclosing in, basically symbolizing that that we're keeping it here.
Come
we're
on.
Keeping it in-house. And every time he posts this GIF, there's an announcement that follows that, you know, hey, the Terps just got a new commit. So he's
giving it away without giving it away.
Exactly. That's the way.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, and I've been keeping up on it. But, man, it seems like every time he does this now, there's like further longer and longer delay before the announcement comes. So like my anxiety is running through the roof.
They're purposely waiting.
Yeah. I'm like, all right. So, you know, I follow as much Terp stuff as I can on Twitter to try to get breaking news as it comes in. And there were some rumblings about the Terps going after yet another quarterback. And Mike Loxley does his thing yet again, which I can tell you now, Florida State has about had it with Mike Loxley. Steals another one from the Seminoles as they land graduate transfer Josh Jackson, a dual threat quarterback out of Virginia Tech, from Virginia Tech. This, again, on the heels of the Terps getting the four-star quarterback Lance Legendre away from the Seminoles, who the Seminoles were very, very high on. Jackson, 6'1", 215 pounds, has 2 years of eligibility left. and can play this season. Passed for just under 3,000 yards as a freshman with 20 touchdowns and rushed for almost 325 yards and 6 touchdowns. This all before starting his sophomore year off strong and ultimately had it cut short as he fractured his left fibula.
That was in what, in the third week or something?
Third week. So, they're playing against Old Dominion.
I had a little funny tie-in real quick.
Yeah.
My mom's a huge Florida State fan. So, like, I just laugh now.
I can tell you, if your mom knows what's going on, she's fuming.
She doesn't know. Like, she still is friends with friends of hers down in the area. And every time somebody's like posting, she'll like, you know, she'll occasionally repost it or she'll do different things. And I just laugh.
Right.
Because I'm also, I'm a closet, well, I shouldn't say closet. I've said it before. I'm a Gators fan.
Right.
But I give you shit for the Ohio, by the way. I'm waiting for the Gator kick back my way.
Yeah, when the Gators are relevant again, maybe I will.
Ooh. I think Tim Tebow's in the news.
It's been a while. It's been since those days, right? But no, I mean, this takes what was really a position of weakness. It was a position that had a lot of question marks going into it before Locksley came in. I mean, you're talking about Kasim Hill coming off of another injury.
Tyrell Piggy, a little bit inconsistent.
Yeah,
sometimes.
He had his injury his freshman year. He played okay last year, but you didn't have that solidify the quarterback position. You didn't have that guy that you could just rely on at quarterback. Now, what was once a strength, a weakness, is now really a strength. You've got Jackson coming in, who I would probably say is going to be starter day one.
Yeah.
Bearing injury. Pigram comes in as the backup now. And then you've got this kid, Lance Legendre, from local ties here that, again, was taken from Florida State. You got three good quarterbacks. I just worry, what did the negotiations go like with this kid, Lance, when they got him to commit?
Was it you're going to be the starter?
Right.
And now you're bringing in another guy.
Exactly. That's what I worry about.
My only other thing is, look, Piggy did bring a little bit of a running threat. And I think that's what worked well last year.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have the greatest arm. We all agree on that. He didn't have the greatest arm in the world. But I do think when you look at him, he's got potential. So I question, and I think, honestly, we'll have to go to Ryan at some point on this as right. we get closer to the season. Do we see a quarterback by committee type
I
scenario?
Hope
I hope not, too. I hope they can settle in because then it gets a guy on a – allows the guy to be able to get comfortable, get on the roll, things like that.
Yeah.
I hate quarterback by committee, but I do question, is that where Locksley is going? Or do we see Piggy go, you know what, I'm going to transfer?
Well, and Piggy may transfer, and that's fine. And you know what? If he does, good on him for trying to find an opportunity. You only go to college once. You get right. one opportunity at it. So if he wants to leave to go somewhere where he can be the starter, that's fine.
I think the AAF was open.
If he wants to accept his role here as a backup, I think then I'm okay with that. That's good. The more I kind of look at this thing, though, if they had the conversation with Lance that, hey, we got the potential to be bringing this transfer in for Virginia Tech, who's going to have 2 years of eligibility. That's it. He's only got 2 years. And the only reason he has the 2 years is because he graduated after 3 years.
Right.
So he's a graduate transfer, can play immediately. Ryan and I were actually talking about that last night. I needed some clarity on that, so I appreciate that, Ryan. That means that they can redshirt Lance if Piggy stays around as the backup. Or if Kasim Hill, which, you know, I know his name's been out there in the transfer portal. We'll see what happens with him, but I can almost guarantee he's probably gone. Your red shirt, Lance, for a year. He sits behind Jackson in Jackson's senior season, his last season.
Right.
So then he's got 3 years after Jackson to play. And really, because he'll be in his third year, if he comes out his first year, which will technically be his red-shirted sophomore year, if he comes out that first year and lights it up, he can leave and go to the NFL draft.
Right.
Because he'll have 3 years of college, 3 years removed from high school.
Right.
So it's not all doom and gloom for Lance even though they've got this other quarterback. I'm sure he was thinking, chomping at the bit, I'm going to be able to come in here and be starter day one.
Right.
If he's a realist, he's got a year to mature, a year to learn, a year to grasp the system. And not to mention, he's going to have better weapons around him come year two, year three, because you give Locksley another year or two of recruiting. Ryan's been hot on this 2020 class that's coming in. This team could be really good.
He'd be a force to reckon with.
Really good, which is only going to help him and his stats in 2 years.
Yeah, we'll have to see. All right, man. Well, let's move on to some B-ball.
All right. Let's talk.
So I know our buddy Ryan, we keep bringing him up because he's such a huge Terps fan. We had him on the show last week. If you didn't get the chance to check it out, go check it out. But we saw this game against Michigan. Now, he was upset about us not moving in the polls. We stayed number 24 this week in the polls. My thing is, look, the games that we have won have not been pretty. They have not been the prettiest games. And we did lose the game to Michigan this past week. And again, not a very pretty effort here, especially in the first half.
No, it wasn't. I mean, this team, sloppy in the first half. 13 turnovers. Okay, they had 16 turnovers in the entire game. 13 of those turnovers were in the first half alone, and they shot less than 30% in the first half. I mean, this was about as sloppy could be, but there was still some optimism because, I mean, they went into halftime only down by 9.
Yeah, it was impressive with what was going on.
Considering how bad they were playing. And how much, in my opinion, Michigan was really dominating the game down low. They basically shut Bruno Fernando down. Bruno looked like a scared puppy that first half. He looked like he had his tail between his legs and like he didn't want to be out there that first half.
That's because Jalen wasn't doing anything either.
No, I mean, nobody down low was. Anytime they got anywhere near the rim, somebody was blocking it. Number one or ogre number two.
Well, let's talk about from the outside. Cowan.
Yeah.
0 points.
Yeah, both him and Bruno were shut down in that first half. It was awful. But, I mean, to your point, and one of the things that you were texting, you know, while the game was going on, this is a second-half team. This team has kind of played this way throughout this year. They come out they come out slow, but they finish strong. And that's what happened. I mean, they came out of the gates second half. Bruno got back to playing like Bruno. Dominated, really, out of the gate that second half. Both him and Cowan got more involved there.
Right.
They actually cut the lead down to 3 with about 10 minutes to go in this game, but then they just went completely cold after that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just they were shot, they didn't have the energy anymore, but I mean, they just could not buy a bucket. Look,
credit to Michigan's defense all game in this. I mean, there were some decent runs by Maryland here, but Michigan is a good defense. They played press all game long.
Right.
They forced the shots. They forced the turnovers. The turnovers in the first half were ridiculous. They were a little bit better in the second half. But just overall, we were talking about it in that message. They were getting killed by that defense.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then tonight, they have another ranked game against another Big Ten opponent. So going back to what you were saying earlier about the whole seeding and where they were at as far as rankings go, you know how I feel about rankings. I think rankings are overrated because they just don't mean anything when it comes to the tournament and where you're seated in the tournament. What matters is how you play in your conference and how your strength of schedule. Those are the things that are going to get you your positioning in the seeding.
My only thing about that is how many times have we seen a seeding where we're like, what? It happens every year.
Right. And
that's
typically because people look at the rankings and they think, okay, well, that team's ranked 15th, so they need to be a 3 seed or a 2 seed, and then they end up being a 5 seed, and you're like, what the hell happened? It's because rankings are overrated.
But
I mean, even if you
hold
go
on a second, a 5 seed means you're in the top 20.
Right.
That's usually true.
Typically.
It's usually typically true. Yeah.
It's not a rule of thumb. It's not a way of seeding them. It's just because you can have one or two conferences that are just absolutely dominating college basketball, and then you have other conferences that just are mediocre, not getting the talent, but yet they're putting up the records because they're dominating their own conference.
Because you're putting up a good record against teams that are subpar. I mean, I think that's why
I say strength of schedule more so than ranking. Strength of schedule and
AP ranking takes that into play.
But it doesn't ultimately determine your ranking. Doesn't determine your seeding. And that's what I'm saying. I think people just pay a little bit too much attention to it. At the end of the day, even with that loss to Michigan, Maryland still sat number 4 in the Big Ten. So if Maryland can finish business, which it doesn't sound very good from what I'm seeing in the chat room.
It is now 60-57. It looks like with 3:16 left in the second half, Maryland is up by 2 points. 58 now. Maryland is up by 2 points at this point. And
the refs are playing a big part.
Yeah,
in this
Ryan
one.
Said the refs are getting Ayala apparently with a foul recently. When you look at the overall box score here, just trying to take a quick look, Bruno Fernando. 9 rebounds all game, 7 points all game, 1 for 3 from the field. Morsell, 4 for 8. Cowan, 5 for 13. 5 for 10 from 3-point land, 17 points total.
That's pretty good.
Wiggins off the bench, 3 for 10, 9 points total with 3 for 7 from 3-point land. Ayala, 3 for 7 and 3 for 6. He has 2 fouls. Bruno has 3. Jalen has 3. Ayala has 2. Morsell has 2. Cowan has 3. Tamayak has 3. Lindo's got 1. Smith has 2. Wiggins has 2. As far as points scored.
Right.
Sorry, and not fouls. But they're getting to the line, but they're getting killed elsewhere.
Well, this is a game that would be huge for Turgeon to finally get the monkey off his back. He is, since he's been here in Maryland, he's 0-19 on the road against ranked teams.
By the way, 21 fouls for Maryland, 11 for Iowa.
Wow, yeah, it's a lot of fouls. But yeah, I mean, this Iowa team,
61-60.
They've kind of been a very up and down team. They had a huge win against Michigan, but then just last week, it took a miracle steal and shot at the end of the game to beat Rutgers. Which Rutgers is not a very good basketball team. Not a very good football team either, for that matter. But not a very good basketball team. This is a game that if the Terps really want to cement their place and possibly get that double bye in the Big Ten tournament, they've got to win this game. They've got to finish strong against Purdue. And Purdue, they can put up numbers. I mean, honestly, if they're only at like 50-some points right now, that speaks to the Terps' defense, because I mean this team's been putting up over 80 points a game.
Yeah, it's actually 61-60. They've gone up at this point. So with 2:23 left, this is going to be really interesting to see what winds up happening here in this game.
All right, Scott. You know what? It's getting late on the show.
We were going to talk
a little Caps today because we haven't really talked about the Caps. So we're going to get you caught up on it. But you know what? We're going to put that off a week just because I don't want to run over too long. They are
currently in fifth place, 33-20-7.
Yeah. So I mean, they're playing about where we expected them to be. You know, going into this year, maybe a little bit of a Stanley Cup hangover, maybe, but you know what? We'll get into it next week. This team's still in prime position to make a strong run in the playoffs.
It's the Caps.
It is the Caps.
And now it's time for the 2 minute warning.
All right, Scott, it's the 2 minute warning, my friend. Your week, this week, you ready to get the show on the road?
Yeah, I'm ready here.
All right, Scott, your 2 minute warning, it starts now.
The Pro Piacenza Soccer Club was only able to field 7 players in a match on Sunday due to one of their players losing their documentation papers.
Your papers, sir. Your papers?
The team has an average age of closer to 19, yet they had to field their 39-year-old hitman or equipment manager to even start the game. The game ended up being a 20-0 blowout. A-plus for effort here, but maybe you should have just forfeited because this move got you expelled from the Class 3 European League. Just saying. Third baseman Mike Moustakas has signed a 1-year, $10 million deal with the Brewers. The deal also comes with a mutual option for the team and Moustakas in 2020. No doubt it helped. He helped the Brewers get to the World Series, to one game within the World Series, but it's a continuing trend that we see these smaller deals for bigger stars, minus Manny now. With just 10 laps left in Sunday's Daytona 500, Paul Menard turned Matt Benedetto into the wall and triggered a 21-car wreck that caused a red flag and stopped the race. Fred and I watched this wreck live, and boy, was this thing ugly. Yeah. But it's okay, because there were 2 more red flag stops in the next 8 laps. 2.
Crazy finish.
After meeting with the Steelers owner Art Rooney, Antonio Brown tweeted out that him and the organization have mutually agreed that it's time to move on. After, Brown took to Instagram and put up basically a video saying, if you're interested, team should come a knocking.
So long, farewell.
It's going to be really interesting to see where he lands, considering the drama that's surrounding him in the offseason at the end of last year. Who knows? Browns, Raiders, Ravens? Who knows? We'll see.
No.
While autographing a photo on Sunday, Bills QB Josh Allen trolled Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey, writing, hey, Ramsey, am I still trash now?
Yes. Yes, you are.
That was too funny.
That was funny, man. Jalen Ramsey, I was real high on him in the draft. I was a corner that I wanted to see come here to Baltimore. But he's got that, like, I don't give a damn attitude. He will talk trash to anybody and everybody. You know, at the end of the day, though, he does back it up. He's a hell of a cornerback. He goes out there and plays. But, man, sometimes you don't want to poke the wrong bear. And I'm not saying Josh Allen is that guy.
He doesn't face anybody, luckily, so.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
All right, man. Well, yet another good show.
Yeah.
We got episode number 85 in the books. Now 15 more before 100. Stay tuned. We are going to be doing our last call show. Also, stay tuned in future episodes. In the next few weeks, we will be announcing our plans for our 100th episode.
Yeah. Things in the works.
We want to remind you guys to visit us at birdlandbs.com. You can see all of our episodes. You can see them. You can hear them. It's all there. You can learn about Fred and myself. You can contact us. Get yourself some Birdland BS gear and more. You can also check us out on the Big Play Network, bigplay.com. The Big Play app, man, that thing is awesome. Yeah. I know that they're looking to
download that app if you haven't already.
They're looking to up that thing. It's awesome. All the content for you there. Also, Birdland Sports, there's enough podcasters and writers there for you to watch and listen every day of the week for fans, by fans. Follow us on all of our social media sites at BirdlandBS, at FredBLBS, at ScottBLBS. Make sure you hit us up on all of our social media, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat. They're all there. Like, follow, and subscribe on all of them. Yes, I got it all in. If you want to hear your opinion or topic, make sure you reach out to us if you want to hear about your opinion or topic. We'll bring it up on the show. Make sure you hit the audio podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts. As I keep saying, we're working on iHeartRadio. And make sure that you tune in next week, as always, at 8:45 every Tuesday night. We want to thank you and tune in for every episode. For Birdland BS, I'm Scott.
I'm Fred.
We'll see you guys.
See ya.